This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. Getting on a call with William Shatner is maybe not unlike strapping into a rocket. He's a fast, curious thinker. Things move quickly, and you aren't sure exactly where you might end up. Shatner has been releasing music for almost as long as he's been acting, releasing his first album, The Transformed Man, in 1968, when he was still playing Captain Kirk on the original Star Trek. Now, in 2021, he's releasing his eighth album. It is titled simply Bill. And while it's largely autobiographical, Shatner shows off his range with collaborations in a variety of genres. Doesn't matter if it's rock, pop, or country, he makes the songs his own with his unique spoken word performance. Coming up, we'll get into that record, and Bill, that's what he likes to be called, will tell stories from his life, including his recent trip to space in mid-October. So, strap in. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here's William Shatner, Monday Night in London, from his new album.
It was early in the crisis, on a tour of the UK, trapped in my hotel room, seeing no one every day. Some shows had been cancelled, others, though, had not. It was Monday night in London. Would this be my last shot? Why would anyone dare the virus of our age just to see an actor strut upon the stage? The Prime Minister was clear, stay in place and do not roam. Would any thinking person defy and leave their home? It was Monday night in London, and I waited in the wings. It was Monday night in London. Would there be anything?
That song is called Monday Night in London from the new album from William Shatner. The album is called Bill, and I am delighted to welcome William Shatner to World Cafe. Hello.
Oh, thank you, World Cafe.
The album is called Bill. Can I call you Bill?
Yes, great. That's why it's called Bill.
Right, that's what I figured. I mean, it's a tremendous record. I've enjoyed it. I've been listening to it
a lot. Wait a minute. That's very important. We can't slide by that one. What did you think of the record?
Tremendous.
Fantastic. God, that's so good.
I really, enjoyed it.
Can you imagine what that does? It's such a personal record. It's an album that I have become really dear friends with a gentleman who I wouldn't have gotten to know if he hadn't been somebody who I had business dealings with. And then after the business dealings, I don't remember why, years and years ago, we decided to have a Chinese meal, and the duck was so good. So what began was a customary duck dinner every time he came in from New York. So one day he brings a friend of his along, whose name is Dan Miller. Dan Miller was one of the founding members of They Might Be Giants. You know the name?
Yeah.
You're nodding your head. That's great. So Dan Miller comes along, and my friend says, this is Dan Miller. And when we were students at university together, we had a musical group, and Dan and I wrote lyrics. And I said, you write lyrics? And then Dan says, you know, the three of us should do an album together. Oh, because I had a number of albums out. And I said, yeah, it's a good idea. I don't know who I'm dealing with. And Dan says, and Rob could write the lyrics. And I believe it was Dan said, and let's do the album about you. About me? Of course. That's what a great subject matter. Because I had written several books. And Rob, the gentleman that I was, my friend, had read all the books, and he said, well, let's do a song about it. And he named a story that I had written about that occurred to me. So we started writing this album, mm-hmm. and COVID hit, and we wrote the whole album doing it on phone or on Zoom, or it was all, and then recorded it on an iPhone. And it turns out that Rob is like a great poet. And he's got a more practical job. He doesn't do lyrics. He doesn't write for a living, although he's written several books. So it became a meeting of talents, and it is such, the three of us have had such a great time in this past year putting this distended musical journey together.
You know, like a lot of your albums, your delivery on this album, I mean, the writing is great, the music is great, your delivery to me is the star of the show. Once you've got the music nailed down for a song, do you rehearse and try different ways of performing the songs or to see what feels right?
See, that's a very insightful question, Raina. That's a very insightful. So we write So Far From the Moon. So this event happened to me that I'm now, it's after Star Trek, and I'm broke. I've divorced, I think, and I can't cash a $15 check. And I've put together a company to do summer theater, and I'm living in the back of a pickup with a little cab on the top of it so I can save money. And I'm now parked on Long Island in a pasture. And I've got a little black and white television set on my chest, and I'm looking through the window at the moon in Long Island. And I got this black and white television set, and it's broadcasting the Armstrong landing on the moon, setting foot on the moon. The previous year I'd been to Cape Canaveral, and they presented me with a model of the spaceship, and I signed, "I'll see you on the moon." And they said, "Why don't we put this rocket ship together?" We'd gone down to the local village store. We got this model of the starship. We put it together with great difficulty, they said. And I said, "Why? It's not rocket science." And they left, you know. And I said, "I'll see you on the moon." And I left. And here I am a year later at the nadir of my life. And there they are at the apex, of their life, the apogee of their life. And the thought that occurred to the three of us, I'm so far from the moon.
Yeah.
And that became the song, which was like, I'm so far from my ambition. I'm so far from what I ever wanted to be. I'm so destitute. And that was the song. Now, what is the character of the song? So I called Brad Paisley, an old buddy, and I said, "I've got a song." And he says, "Oh, I'd love it." And he sings, he accompanies me, So Far From the Moon, but he's a Western country singer. It becomes a Western country song. It became whoever I could, who volunteered or I could convince to accompany me, that became the character of the song, because all we had was poetry and ambition.
Yeah. I mean, you've seemed comfortable in pretty much every genre you've tried while making music over the years. And is that part of the reason? Because it's like taking on a role?
Well, you know, it is, of course. The truth of the matter is, and I want you to tell anybody, you promise to keep it a secret.
Promise.
I can't sing. And I envy. No, not envy, because that's a bad word. I long when I hear a great voice, whether it's a cultivated, trained voice or just a natural talent crooning. I wish I could do that. God, I wish I could hold a tune and sustain a note, and I can't, because it's so, you know, singing. If you say sing the word love, you could invest the word love with passion because you're sustaining a note, and the audience listening to that note. Well, what do you do as an actor when you say love? It's in and out of your mouth before you can sustain a note. So it's a difficult premise to try and mix spoken word and music and get something in between. Now, this is spoken word album because we want it to be available for judgment as a spoken word album. But for me, it's like in between. It's somewhere in between music and poetry, and it's in a genre that maybe nobody else has done, or I've never heard of it.
Well, I want to play So Far From the Moon right now so people can hear Brad Paisley and they can hear you. This is So Far From the Moon on World Cafe.
The Apollo mission took off. The planet watched, enthralled. But man's greatest achievement made this man feel so small. I stared up at the sky, the stars like little pins. Armstrong took a giant leap, while I fell down again.
It was 4 in the morning, dawn was coming through, but I was bound by gravity, so far from the moon. Yeah, it was 4 in the morning, dawn was coming soon, but I was bound by gravity, so far from the moon.
William Shatner with So Far from the Moon from his new album, Bill, a song featuring Brad Paisley. It's a song about listening or watching a broadcast of the moon landing, July 20th, 1969. And then, you know, you fast forward 52 years later, and a couple of weeks ago, you got a little closer to the moon yourself, Bill, when you went to space.
65 miles closer to the moon, right?
Oh, okay. So there's like, that's significantly closer, I'd say, closer than most people have been.
Well, you can't jump that high.
I've tried. It must be amazing to think back to that younger version of you thinking I'm at the bottom of my life right now, listening to the moon landing, and then getting to go. Before you went, did you have an idea in your head of what going to space might be like?
Well, I followed the astronauts were heroes of mine. I mean, I loved them. I loved their masculinity. Even the ladies were so strong and had the what we want astronauts to look like. You know, they're brave. Houston, we have a problem. Imagine you're in space and the possibility is you're going to burn.
Yeah.
You're going to not only burn, but you're going to burn slowly as you watch the incendiary fires light up your spacecraft and you become a cinder and a bright spot in the sky, and then you get extinguished. And this cool, calm test pilot voice says, "Houston, we have a problem. We're all going to die." The next, you know, ellipse, and then we're all going to die. He doesn't say it, but that's the next part of the sentence. We're all going to die, we're going to die, and we're going to burn. That's, I mean, if it had been anybody else, hey, Houston, we've got a problem. No, it's Houston, we have a problem. We're all going to die. That's enviable, that thing. That never occurred to me. It did occur to me. Going up in space and having that sanguine effect of, you know, yes, I'm going to burn and it's all right because it's in the interest of science. So I thought that's what it would be like, but it wasn't like that at all. And what it was like is another whole story.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was video people may have seen right after you landed. You got out of the rocket. You described the experience and it was very emotional. I'm going to play just a clip of that.
I hope I never recover from this. I hope that I can maintain what I feel now. I don't want to lose it. It's so much larger than me and life. And it hasn't got anything to do with the little green planet, the blue orb. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the enormity and the quickness and the suddenness of life and death of it all.
So in that clip, you say, I hope I never recover from this.
Yes.
Have you been able to hold on to that feeling?
As I talk to you now, I'm still moved. I think it's wonderful, really, in a way. It will... Oh, somebody years ago, I had a death in the family, and it was horrible, and there was deep grief, and it went on for quite a while. And so years later, this individual had gone through something the same. He looked at me and he said, it never goes away, does it? That feeling of grief over the loved one. And I said, no, it never goes away. And this is the same thing. I hope that, because the sadness I felt was the sadness for the world, that the destruction that's going on in this extraordinary, beautiful, I mean, as I talk to you on the microphone, I'm looking around and everything, it's beautiful. If only we stop for a moment and be conscious of the beauty. And we're destroying it.
It changed the way that you look at the Earth and the world around you, but did going to space change the way that you look at the sky, when you look up now, is it different?
That's such a beautiful question. That's why you're doing what you're doing. That is a beautiful question. So the way I looked at it was this. The coming up through that thin veil of air, which is blue because of the refraction of the air and the sun, obviously it's colorless, but it's blue to our eyes. Coming through that blue haze and then being slapped like a punch in the face with that black space, what I saw because of the sun in my eyes and the sun, I saw blackness. I saw ugly, I saw death in that blackness. I, who have been so curious about how stars form and galaxies and the and whether we can question the speed of light, and I've talked to scientists all over the world. I think I may have had the last interview with Hawking, Stephen Hawking. I'm just fascinated by the mystery and the romance, really, of space, all that stuff going on forever. And where did it start? And how did it end? And the Big Bang and all these wonderful, magnificent, monumental things that we humans are thinking about that nobody else thinking. I don't imagine an orca is thinking about that or an elephant. But we're thinking about those Big Bang tectonic plates. And I didn't see any of that.
Yeah.
I saw death. I saw absolute freezing. There's nowhere to go. It's great to talk about it and look at a telescope and say, oh, look at that. Look at what we're seeing in the night sky or the sky. And do some calculation and do mathematics that leads you can speak philosophically in mathematics. Well, I've got a show called I Don't Understand, an interview show. It's everything I don't understand. And I don't understand. I've had two mathematicians on who teach mathematics. And well, how do you do philosophy in mathematics? And I can't, you know, it's impossible for me to understand. So that's romance there.
Mm-hmm.
There's romance in the knowledge. There was no romance in what I saw.
Yeah.
I saw death.
I'm going to play another song from the album now called What Do We Know? And you ask in What Do We Know, is there something beyond just me and you? If you touch on death a few times on this album, does having an experience like that shift your view on death?
No, we don't know.
Yeah. Are you okay with not knowing?
No. I want to know! Tell me the truth. But everybody's railed against that inability to know. I mean, people have faith. I have faith and I know because my faith. Well, good for you. I wish I had the same thing, but I don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, here is What Do We Know? It's William Shatner on World Cafe.
Mindfulness taught me to try to live life aware of each moment, free of judgment or strife. But lately, my thoughts drift beyond waking breath. I find time better spent to be pondering death. What do we know? What are the answers? The baby's birth, the murderer's cancer. Why should we care? What should we do? Is there something beyond just me and you?
What do we know? William Shatner on World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. His new album is called Bill. He is my guest today. In that song, you're kind of standing at this point in your life, pondering what's next. But there are a few songs on the album that take us back to when you were younger, growing up in Montreal, including one that came from a nickname you had in school, Tuffy.
Yeah.
How did you get that nickname?
Well, I was in grade school, so that would put me from 6 to, 13 or 14 until you get to high school. And I'm Jewish, and I was in a non-Jewish area. And so because these kids who weren't Jewish, and it seemed like I was believed in something foreign, which of course it doesn't. I mean, there's some little variation that if you're a neutral observer, you'd say, well, that's very little difference in your belief system. I had to fight. And so people would gang up on me, there'd be two, three people, guys on top of me, and I had to fight back, and I got really, you know, tough about it. And somebody showed me a yearbook from those years after graduating from that school, and I had forgotten, but I was reminded. My nickname in school was Tuffy, and I apparently I'd go around showing my muscles to people, because I guess, you know, I'm thinking, hey, you know, I'm so afraid of fighting and losing that I'll show you a muscle and you'll show, you know, and you won't pick on me. But they did. I think I have an insight into those people who are a little different, skin color, belief system, physically, who are a little different, and they get beaten up for being different. Somewhere in that beating up lurks a thought of, gee whiz, I wonder if they're right. I wonder if I am inferior. I wonder if I am less than what they are because of they keep beating me up. It's right out of the Nazi handbook.
Yeah, you start to maybe believe that there's a reason,
yeah,
or something. Yeah. I mean, you sing in Tuffy about growing this hard shell, but it also kind of sounds like there is some regret to that. How do you balance protecting yourself?
That's very perceptive, again, of you. So at the end of the song, I begin to say it, I'm tougher! That's the way I say it. And then, in the beginning. And then I begin to deaccelerate, to diminish the aggression. I'm tougher as I begin to what? Mediate myself or lose faith or all of the above. It becomes less and less demonstrative.
Before we play Tuffy, I do want to ask you one more question about it. How do you balance protecting yourself with connecting to people?
Well, there's a humanity there that you need to access. There is, after the beating, there is a universality that you have to plumb, that you and the person asking you the question, or you and the person you're beside, you need to go to the mutual humanity and realize that all those differences are negligible, that what is inside all of us is this communal humanity, and we're all the same with these little variations that are meaningless. All that is really meaningful is, are you a good person or are you a bad person? And even bad has its shades.
This is William Shatner with Tuffy on World Cafe.
They chased me around, throw insults and words, try to make me their clown. So I stood and I fought, took every punch they could throw. Ripped the books from my hand, pushed my face in the snow. I kicked and I scrapped till my knuckles got raw. Their hatred of me, I never could thaw. Their fear of my faith and my immigrant past made me loathe who I was in the role I was cast. Now I'm tougher than the rest. You wanna come at me? Better give it your best.
I'm Raina Duris. That was Tuffy on World Cafe. My guest today, William Shatner, has a new album out called Bill. I feel like you might be someone who enjoys a good debate. Is there a part of you that likes a fight now and then?
Well, I've had enough physical fighting. It's enough. I'm I'm not, I guess every so often, yes. You know, I'm thinking back, all of a sudden, yes, I remember that driving a car, and I must have cut somebody off by mistake. And they pull alongside me, they're honking their horns, they're shaking their fist, and road rage. And then I got road rage, and I'm shaking my fist. And then we're down a side street, and in the middle of the street is a truck that's unloading. So they're in the middle of the street, and traffic is going on both sides of that truck. And I'm thinking, oh, I'll just get past this guy. And he can't get past me because the truck will be in his way. And golly, he cuts in front of me, stops his car, and he gets out of his car. And now I'm enraged, and I get out of my car, and I'm going toward, and I see this kid, he's about 25 years old, he's got these wide shoulders and narrow hips, he's like it, and I'm just a few years ago, and I'm going towards him, and he's going towards me, and he says, oh, Shatner, I was your stuntman.
What? Really?
Yes. And he's like, all agreeable. Oh, look at that. Well, Bill, Jim. And you were my what show? And I could have gotten into a real fight with this guy who could have beaten me into a pulp. And what was I doing? And I think about that. What's the matter with you? I keep saying to myself, but all those old instincts are lying buried, just waiting to be uncovered.
Maybe as a last question, making an autobiographical album where you tell stories and talk about feelings you've had throughout your life, were there memories, were there feelings that you dug up during this that you'd forgotten about that were surprising to you?
Absolutely. When I had to do stories, there's a story there that Ben Folds wants to do on the next album. So Ben said, this is the song I want to do. And it's called Lion on the Wall. I think it's called Lion, the Lion on the Wall, or Lion on the Wall, L-I-O-N. One of my oldest daughter, who was 3 or 4, started crying in the middle of the night. And I ran to her room, her crib, and she was looking at some shadows on the wall. There was a windstorm, and the street light was casting shadows from the trees, and the trees' boughs were moving up and down. And she was looking at the wall, at the shadows of those boughs moving up and down. She was crying, and she was, lion, lion. And she was thinking it was an animal going to get her. And I was able to comfort her and say, it's only shadows, it's only. And she went back to sleep. And I thought, as the years went by, how easy it was, what a wonderful thing it was for I as a father to be able to comfort my daughter and give her a rational, reasonable explanation of her fear, which as she got older and had other more complex fears, I wasn't quite as useful, you know.
It gets harder.
Yeah. So the song is about how easy it was then and how complex it is now to help somebody.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Since I'm excited to hear that you're working with Ben Folds on your next record a little bit, yeah. Maybe I can go back and play something you did with Ben Folds years ago to finish things off here, just because I love this song, In Love. It's one of my favorites from Fear of Pop, Volume 1.
Oh, fantastic. I think I wrote that song.
This is In Love. It's William Shatner and Ben Folds on World Cafe.
I remember the night we met. That night we sat entwined under summer skies. I looked into your eyes and you looked into mine. You said, you're not like the rest. And I nodded. No one understands me, you said. And I nodded once again, as if to agree that all men are indeed the same. Somehow, you said, I was different.
On World Cafe, that was William Shatner. I've been speaking with him today. His new album is called Bill. It's fantastic. It is out now. And it has been such a joy talking with you today. I feel like I could talk to you for hours, Phil.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you, dear.
That was so cool. William Shatner. I'm Rena Duras. More in a moment on World Cafe.